persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. When will the brain masseur start focusing on Hillary and get off the Trump trashing thing? Or at least start focusing on the latest effrontery of King Obama, decreeing now all schools will allow perverted men to use the girls' restrooms, you know? Something Trump's okay with, by the way. The thing with Hillary is that she truly is a known quantity. I mean, there really is not anything I can say about Hillary that my audience does not already know. As for Trump, the problem there is that a lot of my listeners are being fooled by him into thinking he is the non-politician, the outsider, the only one not tied to the one-worlders. And I think they're wrong. And I think they're going to be deeply disappointed when they wake up and realize the Donnie is the quintessential politician. And when they discover that Cruz really was the only guy that actually had the guts to stand up to the establishment like Reagan did. Now, Trump has always been a negotiator, right? He's always been political in the way he deals with government, and he's always been willing to compromise, even in areas of his own avowed personal convictions, in order to make the deal. All of the stuff he's admitted to. Now, if Trump wins the nomination, you are going to see him pivot left on many of his issues. Actually, it's already happening. And if he wins the election, well, you're going to see him work with the establishment to, quote-unquote, get things done. And he'll remind you that he told you during his campaign that he is a negotiator and that you shouldn't worry. You can trust him because he's making the best deal that can be made. And then, all of a sudden, what Trump actually believes will begin staring you in the face and mocking you with that Trump grin. And the groaning and moaning you'll hear across America will be the young and naive followers of Trump experiencing very painful growing pains. But we can hope they'll grow up and then wake up. But will it be too late? No worries, mates. The brain masseur will certainly turn his guns on Hillary and Bernie in due time. Both of whom, by the way, beat Trump in national polls. But as for right now, Trump has not yet won the nomination. And more importantly, in my opinion, he is the liar that I'm most concerned about deceiving my friends. As for who will I vote for? Well, I'm going to reveal that in the second segment. Okay, folks. It's time for your brain massage, and it's going to be an interesting...
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Now, why do I think Alex Jones is a deceitful man? I haven't gone on a left turn here. Hold on. I was introduced to Alex Jones with his documentary on the Bohemian Groves back, I don't know, 2005, somewhere back in the early 2000s. Something of a curiosity to us Californians, by the way. It's where the uppity ups gathered to conspire formation of what came to be called the Manhattan Project some years earlier, back in 42, I believe it was. Another one of those secret clubs only the very rich or very famous guys can join. And while it seemed to me Alex was making more of the secrecy of the club than was warranted by the facts, that nevertheless, he did seem to me honestly interested in getting at the truth, and I began using him as a source for information along those lines when I needed it. And then along the way, he flipped out once in a rant on his TV program, going on and on about how no one's getting it, and he was all mad and fuming. And I noticed, interestingly, that from that time forward, he began getting more and more extreme in his allegations with less and less evidence to support them. And lately, I have found myself running down so many false leads from Alex that I have pretty much stopped chasing down his false flags. So briefly, here's another example of the sort of thing that turns me off from Jones. From his site, quote, Google's self-driving car gets into wrecks, drives on the wrong side of the road, and slams into multiple people in a new YouTube video that affirms many people's fears, end quote. Now, what would be your take from that headline? Okay. Now, you read the article farther, and here's what you discover. Quote, YouTube uploader Pizza for Breakfast says he created the video purely as satire, but says it could serve as an illustration of what may actually occur when autonomous vehicles take to the roadways, end quote. My point here, this is not a big deal, but my point here is that in order for me to take someone seriously, they need to be, well, how about serious? And I don't mean in manner or even in attitude. Now, we all, you get playful from time to time, but in his representation of the facts, in his handling of the truth, I expect him to be serious. Now, this thing on the Google's nascent self-driving car borders on the who cares, right? I mean, really, who cares? We have autopilot for jets. Who can't see autopilot for cars? Is anyone so small-minded these days they cannot envision self-driving cars? I mean, who didn't see this coming? I mean, unless there's a conspiracy, you know, to get us all in self-driving cars that the one world government can take over and then wipe out a third of the population by massive freeway pileups. By the way, I know that there is a conspiracy to wipe out a third of the population of the planet. It's talked about in the Bible, and we'll talk about it in my series on conspiracy theories Sunday night, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. But what actually is the conspiracy here? What is the problem with creating a vehicle that gives older folks, folks who can no longer pass the eye test for driver's license, for example, and so on, an opportunity to have some independence or to extend their independence at least somewhat? Now, folks, I can very easily see this even being a life-saving technology. So why trash this advanced technology? That's not what he's trashing. He's trashing Google. If anyone wonders why I don't use Alex Jones as a resource for my research anymore, the answer is that I don't appreciate time wasted chasing down false flags. Also, I don't respect sensationalistic journalism, and I don't respect journalists who trash someone or some company gratuitously simply because they are angry at them for some reason. You know, Alex is mad at Google because he believes Google policies are privacy invasive. Well, okay, I get that. I think we have reason to be concerned about the appetite new technology seems to have for devouring our privacy. But this does not mean Google's self-driving car is necessarily evil, and or that everything Google does is bad. It's like these silly kids, you know, fighting on the playground over hogging the swing, right? Get out of the swing! No. Na-na-na-na-na, I got the swing. And then it goes to this. You have a funny haircut. You've got big ears. Dumbo ears, Dumbo ears. You see what I'm saying? You know, Alex is angry at Google because they refused to let him take his camera man into a Google event, even though Google was filming everything at the event. Well, it's their event. But anyway, so Alex is ticked off at Google for this and some other reasons, and he decides to use them as a toilet, whatever that means. And then just out of spite, it seems, he just started attacking everything and anything they do. If it's got Google's name on it, attack and trash. It's just, I don't know, that kind of childish. We've become a nation of grammar school children. Come on. Well, friends, I don't have time to participate in childish rants and spiteful nonsense. Here's a question for you. If everything the conspiracy folks have been saying about America is true, I mean, along the lines that the voters make no difference at all, that the shadow government controls everything, and Donnie is outside of all of that, why is he winning? I have noticed that a lot of Trump supporters are young men and women who are sharp, savvy, and cynical. Now, granted, there are many more who are so full of anger and of themselves that Trump has been able to clip a ring into their nose and lead them about. And there are many who are projecting their own dreams or fantasies of getting in on the in crowd or even with the establishment onto him. But there are some who are sharp, savvy, and cynical. All right? They think Trump is the outsider, the Trump card in their hand in this play. That he is the non-politician, that he is the only candidate that is not a one-worlder, for example. But I thought the voters didn't matter, right? I thought the fix was in, the game is rigged, the will of the people is irrelevant. Isn't it ironic that Trump proves you wrong about that? Which means, apparently, that if the people actually get a choice that they find attractive, they can make a difference. Wow, who knew? You mean if the people actually have a choice, they can overturn the entire conspiracy? That's pretty cool. But it proves that theory wrong, doesn't it? You see, voting does matter. I'm doing a series on conspiracy theories on Sunday nights at 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. I believe there are those who conspire to take over our government, and I believe Trump is one of them, har har. I do, actually. I think Trump would like to win, but listen, I think he would be perfectly okay if his old buddy Hillary wins. I do believe there are persons who operate in the shadows and conspire, perhaps at the Bohemian Grove, to take over our government and turn it into a socialist state, to reduce it to become a satellite state of a one-world government. And I think evidence ties all this to the UN in significant measure. Now, what I don't believe is that everyone who believes in free trade is part of that conspiracy, nor do I believe that every event that can be rightly conceived as in one way or the other furthering that objective necessarily is itself evil or done by evil men with evil ambitions. I mean, it's possible for someone, for example, to support free trade and treaties with our international neighbors that are intended to further free trade without marking them as one worlder conspirators. I also believe it's very possible for someone to pose as a protectionistic nationalist who is actually serving the interests of the one worlders by isolating America and getting America out of the way while they build their one world tower in Europe and Asia so they can then clobber America and take her out. I believe America's been in the way of this, not helping it along the way. I believe in Americanism, not nationalism, by the way. I believe that our system of governance as it is established in our traditional institutions and documents truly is the best way to go and deserves our utmost efforts to defend and protect it and is in fact what has been in the way of this European one world government scheme. I do believe nationalism is wrongheaded on almost every level in which it's considered. Severing trade ties with our international neighbors is foolish. It's cutting off our own nose to spite our face. On the other hand, obviously, surrendering any sovereignty in those trade agreements is a terrible mistake. Crony nationalistic socialistic protectionism is every bit as bad as crony capitalism. In fact, it's worse, if that's possible. It is, in fact, just another way for government to inject itself into picking and choosing winners and losers. And friends, for a big government, big brother, get into your business guy, you can't do better than Trump. I mean, who wants tariffs, right? All tariffs are passed on to the consumer. Yeah, the guy who loses is always the little guy. Tariffs are taxes disguised as patriotism. Now, I believe in freedom, economic freedom. And the more government gets involved, the less freedom we have. Now, Donnie is the kind of guy who believes that everything gets done by government. That's why he has spent his career buying politicians. The difference between Donnie and the rest of the Dems is an argument over management style and efficiency. So far as he is concerned, Bush and Obama were right about the stimulus, about the bank bailouts. He thinks Obama's original idea about health care, single payer and all that, is the way to go. Donnie thinks we should nationalize manufacturing in the United States. Why? Because he has a European socialistic view of private industry. He's the one playing into the hands of the one worlders. You see, the only difference between Donnie, Hillary, and Bernie is Donnie thinks we need better management of the socialist state. But make no mistake about it, he is a socialist. Now, you think Donnie's an outsider, when he's always been an insider playing the system. You think Donnie is non-political, when he has played the political games throughout his career. You think Donnie is genuine, the real deal, when in truth, he's an actor that has created a public persona that he's marketed quite effectively, by the way. And you think Donnie is going to build a wall, deport the illegals, and destroy the political establishment? But what he's actually going to do is wheel and deal with the present established power exactly as all other politicians have had to do. And for the same reason, pragmatism. While he's running for election, he can be all ideological. But when he starts trying to work in the system, he's going to have to go totally pragmatic. You watch. It's not ideology with him. It's not conservative convictions with him. It's not about character with him. It's the deal. With Donnie, it's all about the deal. All right, I went long on this segment. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back and answer the question so many of you are wondering about, and I've been asked by many of you, who am I going to vote for in the upcoming California primary? Hold on. I'll be right back.
Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face with, to confront. The greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps it's been a while since you've experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Or perhaps you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God, and when you do, you'll know that God is real. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria. Go to santamarialighthouse.org. To make a donation, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com or mail your gift to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
Devil beware.
Pastor Scheibach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheibach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps of the church above the ark, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. I'm doing a series on Sunday nights offering a biblical look at conspiracy theories. 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. Many of Trump's supporters are folks who follow the conspiracy theories. Some among them are sharp, intelligent, and cynical young men and women, and I think Donald is duping these folks. But that doesn't mean I don't believe there is a conspiracy to overturn the American way of life. And I believe it started way back during our revolution. I mean, it's a conspiracy to take us back to Egypt, as it were. That is, to take us back to Britain, to take us back to Europe, to make us a part of the one-world global government ruled by a tower-building Nimrod, like Trump. Building towers that symbolize defiance to God and that serve as a monument to his own vanity. Buyer's remorse for Obama did not kick in until about a year into his first term. Assuming Donnie gets the nomination, buyer's remorse might start about a month into the final stretch toward the election. But you know, he's already backing off the hot-button issues that he used for the media to give them cover that they needed to avoid letting this election ever really become about the issues. Did you notice that? Yeah, he kept all this media drama going on. He read his press release December 7, 2015, declaring, quote, Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the H is going on, end quote. Now, that was then. Now, he says, that was only a suggestion. So, was the wall only a suggestion? Was deporting the illegals only a suggestion? Of course, it's a negotiation, man. All that Donald has done is take the usual political game that's played and spun it as a business maneuver. Evidently, Donnie's supporters understand and forgive anything he does if it's a business maneuver. If it's a political maneuver, well, now that's very bad. But if it's a business maneuver, then, well, hey, you know, that's business. Please pay attention. Everything Donald is passing off as necessary to do business is exactly what politicians have always done to do their business. It's the same thing. Now, look. When Donnie made his big press release statement about stopping all Muslim immigration until we can figure out what's going on, I believed right then and there it was a media stunt. I agreed that is exactly what needed to be done. But Trump was not in a position to make anything like that happen, so it was safe for him to sound all big and tough on immigration of Muslims into this country at that time. But now that he just might get the power to actually do something like that or be expected to do something like that, he starts singing another tune. So stay tuned, Trumpsters. I'm sure there's more to come. Wait for it. The wall? Well, that was only a suggestion. A first bid in my negotiation to get something done about this problem. I mean, be reasonable. That's a very expensive undertaking. Wait for it. Deporting all the illegals? Hey, you know, when you're negotiating, you always put out there, you know, the extreme offer, right? You always bid high so you can negotiate down. Give yourself some room to negotiate, you know? So that was my opening bid in to begin the negotiations. So now we're looking at ways to deal with this very serious problem. Believe me, it's going to be a good deal. Good deal because, you know, I always make good deals. It's going to be a very sad day when Trumpsters find out they have been hoodwinked and it's going to go right on politics as usual. Wait for it. You've already seen it. He walked back his statement that if abortion were made illegal, women seeking an abortion would need to be punished. And again, you know, when he said that, I knew immediately he would have to back off on that. Because look, I've got this guy figured out. He doesn't mean anything he says. He's negotiating. You have to understand that. I mean, not with conviction and principle. By the way, Cruz didn't impress me with his answer on this either, nor did the rest of them. Of course, if abortion were illegal, then someone hiring a person to commit an illegal act would be complicit in the crime. But Trump says things on the fly. He offers knee-jerk responses to things, and he's responding entirely with an ear to his supporters. He's playing his audience. Now, folks, I don't know if Cruz was trying to capitalize on a Trump dump, but the fact is, if abortion were a crime, then hiring someone to perform the act would have to be considered criminal activity. A misdemeanor, whatever, I don't know, give her a ticket. But look, I think killing babies in the womb is a crime against nature and against nature's God. God will hold these women responsible for killing their babies or having them killed, along with the wicked doctors who commit the act. Now, I don't know how God's going to sort out the responsibility for this kind of thing. I don't have any insight on how he would judge the matter. That's it with him. But I know God will hold women responsible for getting an abortion. Likewise, the men involved in the whole thing. Anyway, the fact is, Trump's pro-life position is embryonic at best, and it's not premised on the scientific fact that the baby is a human being. So he is perhaps at present anti-abortion, at least politically, and maybe there's some personal sentimental reasons involved in this, but he's not pro-life. If the baby is a human being at conception, you don't sentence the baby to the death penalty for a crime committed by its biological father. Now, Trump has already said he wants to weaken the GOP platform plank on abortion. He wants the exception for rape and incest to be included. By the way, Cruz chose Carly, who is just like Trump on this issue. Anti-abortion, but not pro-life. Carly believes murdering the baby in the womb is acceptable in cases of rape or incest. Now, Cruz is on our side with that, and maybe Carly agreed to go along with Cruz. I don't know what the inside deal was on that, but it is sad that within a few weeks of Cruz choosing Carly, he's out of the race. It was a major compromise, in my opinion, on his part, and I think it was a mistake. So here's the dilemma. None of the candidates ever was perfect. All right? Stack up my objections against Trump next to my objections against Cruz. Cruz wins, hands down. Cruz was not perfect. What a shock. But he is a Christian. He is a genuine social and physical conservative, and he is a constitutionalist. He made some mistakes. I know. I don't approve of every decision he has made, but I could vote for Cruz. Now that Cruz is out of the race, can I vote for Trump? That becomes the question, doesn't it? Okay, whom will I vote for in the upcoming California primary? Now, I participated in strategic voting along with the rest of you. I do understand that, for example, if I must choose between, say, eating animal or cow's dung versus eating human dung, well, Ezekiel was confronted with exactly that choice. And now there's eating the lesser of two dungs, Ezekiel 4, 12 to 15. I look at the election before us in somewhat of the same light. Our choice is like the difference between eating human dung or cow's dung. And actually, we're talking about eating the food or cake that was cooked with human dung versus cow's dung, okay? Anyway, the inclination, obviously, is to choose the lesser of two dungs. Whose dump do you want to eat? However, in Ezekiel's case, God expressly told him to eat cakes baked in man's dung. And when he objected, God allowed him to use cow's dung instead, and he opted for the latter. In the case before me, I am obliged to violate the express command of God in either case before me right now. But before I go there, look, first, look at the lesser of two evils approach. And the first thing I want to bring out is this. How has that been working for us? Have we been winning with that strategy? That approach is exactly what has brought us to where we are. It's also the argument, by the way, that the party establishment aristos have used over and again to manipulate us into going along with them on their march to the left. Now, I know the argument is, well, at least it's a slower pace in the march towards subordinating America to European-style socialism. But is it? Is that still the case? Judging from the last decade or two, I would say it hasn't made that much difference in that regard. Reason, it seems, would dictate that when confronted with two bad choices, the best choice would be the least bad one. I'm sure that works well with choices like, you know, between two foods you don't particularly like, or between two teams playing in the Super Bowl, neither of which excite you, or between, say, broccoli and spinach. Now, I happen to enjoy both. Or here you go, between someone who occasionally uses the H word as opposed to someone who drops F-bombs repeatedly. Those choices are pretty simple and straightforward. But is every choice that simple? How about the choice presented to our children a while back in values clarification exercises in public schools when they play a little game called Life Raft? And they were challenged to decide which of the students in the raft should be thrown to the sharks in order to secure the survival of the rest of the kids on the raft. Now, idealistically, every life on the raft would be considered equal in value. And so the decision would be to stick together and hope for rescue and then, you know, let nature take its own course. But pragmatically, some lives are more valuable than others in certain circumstances, are they not? And if there was no reasonable expectation of rescue, well, you see where that goes? That finally ends up in a battle over the survival of the fittest. But there is a third option that actually does clarify our values, and that is the faith option. Belief that, in fact, God did create everyone equal in value, and that each human life is sacred, bearing as it does the image of God, and that God is, and the rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. And so we will not feed any of our fellow bearers of the Imagio Dei to the sharks. Instead, we will stick together and trust God for the outcome. Now, we are on a sinking ship. No question about that. The people seem determined to widen the hole that's causing the ship to sink. Now, I've decided I am not going to participate any longer in widening the hole that's causing our ship of state to sink. I'm done. I'm not going to join those who are widening the hole faster or those who are widening the hole more slowly. I'm not going to add my vote to the widening of the hole. I'm not going to add my vote to the demise of America. My vote no longer belongs to the humanistic rationalists who tell me that I have to decide which kid gets fed to the sharks. I'm going to trust God, and I know that does not mean that I should expect God would necessarily deliver the ship of state from sinking under the weight of the faithlessness and perversity, listen, of God's own people. I mean, it's not the wicked causing this. The fact is, we may well be in that case of nations that forget God, that are turned into hell. Psalm 9:17. What I am saying is that the best hope for America is that God's people turn to Him. That's the best hope we have. And I'm saying I'll no longer participate in moving this nation toward hell, either slowly to hell or rapidly to hell. I'm not giving my vote to hell. God complained against Israel because she set up kings but not by me. He said this in Hosea 8:4. In Deuteronomy 17:15-17, he outlined the criteria his people were to use to set up kings or rulers. While these criteria do not require that I vote only for the perfect man, I mean, Jesus Christ is seated at the right-hand throne of God in heaven for the moment. He won't be back for, well, he might come back today, that'd be nice, but he's not back yet. In other words, listen, God himself chose Abraham and David, and yet these men had flaws. But I am to choose him whom God chooses. According to the criteria in Deuteronomy, I cannot vote for Trump, Hillary, or Bernie, but I can vote for Cruz. You say, but Cruz has dropped out of the race. And I say, yeah, but that's not the point. Not to me. The point to me is to make a statement to this wicked crowd dragging my nation to hell that I'm no longer participating in their game. I believe God answered, I need to vote. I'm going to vote, but I'm not voting for anybody that I cannot with good conscience vote for. So listen, I believe that God answered our prayers for a Christian constitutionalist conservative. And apparently, there are not enough of God's people who are willing to support him for God to weigh us in the balances and find us pleasing. Apparently, we've been weighing the balances and we're found wanting. It looks that way to me right now. It might change. I don't know. But apparently, there is not enough support from God's people for the man I believe God raised up for us, so that God would intervene and give us a leader that would turn this nation to the right. Miracles can happen, but they never happen on the behalf of God's people when they lean on their own understanding and they act contrary to His word and His way, or in direct defiance to His express will. Now, friend, it's not even a decision between idealism and pragmatism. Although if it was, I would stay true to my ideals. It's a choice between faith and rationalism. That is, reason instructed by the word of God, or reason instructed by the way of the world. I believe that's the test God has put in front of us. There is nothing unreasonable about my position. The difference is that the word of God, the Bible, instructs my reason, while perhaps the world instructs, well, yours and so many others. So listen, you vote your conscience, I'll vote mine, and I hope we can still be friends. I have lit the lamps of the church belfry arch, and now you let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000 and say, lights on if you agree, or lights off if you disagree. Leave a message for me. Let me hear what you have to say about these things. If you want to write to me, go to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. And you can send an email to me. And remember, I'm doing a series on Sunday night, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse on the Bible and conspiracy theories. You'll find it fascinating. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.